You are listening to the cycling podcast, at the Tour de France in association with Rafa, the fastest closing in a world tour, the home of cycling with character. Ride and watch with Rafa in 2019 as a partner EF Education First and Canyon Charam. Stage 6. Today, we're in La Planche des Belles Filles.
Where are we, Lionel?
We are in the shadow of La Planche des Belles Filles. In the east of France, Richard.
In the Vosges Mountains, a place we've come to know well, a press centre we've come to know well, and we're gathered here to talk about a fantastic stage, a thrilling stage, aren't we?
We are, but we are just metres away from the famous site where François Thomazeau, two years ago, completed the water challenge.
Is there a plaque?
There should be.
To be honest, I made my own challenge was the wine challenge. I had to tell the red from the rosé and the white, and I succeeded again.
Wow.
If people don't know
what we're talking about, go back to yours and listen to that. I cannot recommend it enough. The blind water taste challenge. It was extraordinary. People still talk about it in this area. They talk about it more than Fabio Aru, Chris Froome, Vincenzo Nibali, the other riders who've won up here at La Planche des Belles Filles. A place, is it too soon to say, iconic? It's becoming
a miraculous spring apparently appeared, you know, in the area. Well, there you are.
Yeah, that would be appropriate. A great stage, Lionel. Can we have the tale of the attack, please?
We can. It's a bit of a humdinger, quite a lot to recap. It was stage
Just speak
six.
Really quickly.
It was stage six from Mulhouse to La Planche des Belles Filles, 160.5 kilometres, 7 categorised climbs on the way, and finishing with the new dusty semi-gravelly section. Really steep in places, wasn't it? And it served up a cracking finish. But before that, the Tour lost its first riders. New Zealand's Paddy Bevin of CCC is out. He crashed on stage four and has 2 fractured ribs. He got through yesterday but was a non-starter today. Nicolas Edé of Cofidis is DNF tonight, so the Tour is 2 men down. And the race really was defined by a break of 14, which included the eventual stage winner, the new yellow jersey, the existing King of the Mountains, and the world's most renowned breakaway specialist. The maximum time gap they got was 8 minutes 30 at the bottom of the Ballon d'Alsace, but the cream in the break rose to the top over the final 2 climbs. Thomas de Gendt, our breakaway man, was out solo for a while, and then we saw Tim Wellens in his polka dot jersey, Trex Giulio Ciccone, who was King of the Mountains at the Giro d'Italia earlier this year, remember? Zandro Marisa of Wanty Group Gobert and Dylan Turns of Bahrain Merida go clear. And at this point, the Yellow Jerseys group with Julian Alaphilippe and everybody else in it was still well over 4 minutes down, so Ciccone was riding into the race lead. The final 4.5 kilometres of the climb were where it all happened. That was where Wellens and then Marisa got dropped, leaving Ciccone and Turns to fight it out for the stage win. And it was the Belgian Turns, riding his first Tour, who proved the strongest as the final really steep sections began to bite. We know that Ciccone had a chance with the yellow jersey, but he was depending on what Alaphilippe and co did, and he was watching the clock, no doubt. The GC battle was also very interesting, and we'll focus on that in the rest of the episode, but the highlights were a long stint on the front by world champion Alejandro Valverde, which set up a decent-looking attack by his Movistar teammate Mikel Landa. We saw the French champion Warren Barguil off, smelling the flowers with a short-lived attack, which he eventually paid the price for. David Gaudu was man of the match for Groupama FDJ, setting up Thibaut Pinot. There were cracks in the armour of Romain Bardet. With 400 metres or so to go, Alaphilippe launched his bid to save the yellow jersey, but then Geraint Thomas came out of nowhere, almost literally, really. We'll talk a little bit about that. And it was a battle royale to get over the line. Alaphilippe slipped out of yellow by 6 seconds, and Ciccone's 8 bonus seconds on the top of the penultimate climb and the 6 that he took on the fight on the finish line were what did it for him. So Ciccone is in the yellow jersey, Peter Sagan still in green, Tim Wellens is still in the King of the Mountains, and Ciccone is also leading the young riders competition, but Egan Bernal will wear that white jersey tomorrow.
Whew. It was a stage where we didn't really know what to expect at the end, and it seemed that a lot of teams and riders didn't know what to expect. Not many had been, or if any at all, had been to see what the actual finish would look like and just how gravelly that road would be. Servus Canavan team director at Team Ineos, sent his daughter, who's a racing cyclist, along to video it in the last couple of days. But a lot of teams were really uncertain about what to expect. So we spoke to a few riders and DSs at the start this morning and asked them what they expected, and also about this odd fact about La Planche de Belfi, that each of the last three times it's been to visit here, the man in yellow at the end of this stage has gone on to win the Tour in Paris. Not many people predicting that Ciccone will be that man, but what did people think this morning? Mike Woods, EF Education First. First day in the mountains today, and this has always been a decisive stage in the Tour. Do you expect it to be decisive today?
Yeah, certainly. I think especially with the extra 900 meters of gravel, it's going to catch guys out even more and make even greater time gaps. Also, you got that time bonus at the top of the second last climb. So all of that's going to combine to there being some gaps, and we're really going to see the GC kind of reveal itself and who are the real contenders.
Every time the Tour is finished here, the guy in yellow has gone on to win the Tour. Do you expect that to be the case this year?
No. That's my prediction. Because I think Alaphilippe's got a good shot at holding yellow here. Like, a lot of people are speculating that he's not a great climber, but he's a phenomenal climber, especially on the type of course like this, especially on a day like today. And then also the yellow gives you that extra bit of juice. So I think he's going to be holding yellow at the end of this. I don't think he'll maintain it all the way to the finish, though.
Nicholas Roach, Team Sunweb.
More than only in La Planche de Belfi, I think most first mountain stages have been like that in Aix-Croix-de-Maine a couple of years ago too. I think it's kind of not a tradition almost, but it's the first battle won is almost a mental fight, saying, all right, I'm the boss. It's quite funny because it's quite particular to the Tour. It didn't quite happen like that in the Giro any other times, or the Vuelta actually, where it's usually done in the third week. But no, I definitely think today, in my opinion, it's a big chance for the GC battle. And if I was a GC leader, I would like to give it a proper go today. So I believe it's going to be a GC day. Is he going to win the Tour? I'm not quite sure. There's a long way to go. And today's a 9-8K climb, not a 25K climb. The Pyrenees are hard. The Alps are brutal. So there's a long way to go. But it's already, I think, a good basis for your level.
George Bennett, Jumbo Visma.
Potentially, yeah. I mean, if Bernal takes the yellow, I mean, I don't know if he can put that much time into Alaphilippe, but it's possible, yeah.
Nicholas Roach thinks that Steven Kruiswijk might be in yellow tonight.
Yeah, it's a possibility for sure.
Ralf Denk, general manager, Bora Hansgrohe.
It's the first really hot stage today, and we're expecting a battle of the yellow jersey. So I'm expecting Team Ineos show the balls. And we will see how we are able to follow this this guys.
Charlie Wigelius, sports director, EF Education First.
Every guy who took the yellow jersey at La Planche de Belfi took it all the way to Paris. Do you think it could be the scenario again this year?
I don't see why not, but for the sake of the race, I hope not. Unless it's us, of course.
Alessandro Di Marchi, CCC.
That's a big question. Like you say, if we look to the tradition, it should be like this. So let's keep going like this.
Stephen King, Groupama FTC.
I mean, it has been up there twice, so I don't think you can already make a rule out of it, because it's a different tour this year with some punchy finales at the beginning, and it's going to be much harder, it's going to be decided at the end. So I don't think we can make too much out of it.
And a much harder stage today compared to the last time it went here.
Yeah, exactly. Last time I rode the front the whole day with Mickey Scher for Richie. This time it's going to be different. It's going to be more for the climbers than for the real punchers. So I think it suits Thibaut even better.
Adam Yates, Mitchelton Scott.
But it's going to be all dependent on how teams ride. It could be conservative. Teams could ride on the front in a hard tempo, and then when it's that large, it's pretty hard to take any time and do anything. So we'll just get to the climb, see how everyone's going, and then take it from there. Yeah, real tough stage. You know, it's not just a final, it's a short stage, but it's a stage full of climbing. In a way, it's a good test.
Richie Porte, Trek Segafredo.
I wouldn't say I like it. It's a brute of a climb, and then this year it's even more so. It's the last kilometer is already hard enough, but you know, on the back of the climbing we do this stage, it's a real GC day. I think Ineos control. That's kind of how it always is. But look, we'll see if Alaphilippe's up to holding the jersey. He's been really good so far. So. Look, it's not a given that Ineos can control that because, I mean, it's such a hard stage beforehand.
Maxi Monfort, Lotto Soudal. This has been a very decisive stage when it's been on the tour in the past. Do you expect today to be as decisive?
I think so. It's true that the first stage of every tour is a bit disappointed for the followers. But today, we see the profile. It's one of the hardest stages of the tour, especially with the start, hard start. And the final we know, but the start is... will make the day more difficult. So yeah, I expected something from the big favorite. Yeah, I finished on 10th place a few years ago. I don't know why they make that, because that was hard enough. But yeah, the last ramp with a slope of more than 20%, 25%, it's gonna be even more interesting. And if a guy is on the limit, he can lose 20, 30 seconds in the last K if he's really in difficulties.
The fastest closing in a world tour, the home of cycling with character. Ride and watch with Rafa in 2019 as a partner EF Education First and Canyon Charam.
Thank you very much indeed to our headline sponsor, Rafa. Now, Rafa make the lovely cycling podcast range of clothing, Pedaleur de Charme and Pedaleuse de Charme, t-shirts, jerseys, casquettes. We've seen a couple of cycling podcast listeners in Pedaleur de Charme t-shirts at this Tour de France, and it's been very nice to meet them. They're available at rafa.cc if you'd like to purchase one of those items. But we'll be presenting free of charge a Pedaleur de Charme t-shirt to a rider. We'll not be then invoicing them for it. This week, later this week, a few contenders for week one. Michael Morkov,
it's a very good idea.
Popular nominee. I know, maybe we'll do the Twitter poll just with for the four options being Michael Morkov, Mikhail Murku.
Here we go.
Different pronunciations of the same rider. Anyway, a listener to the podcast reported that they'd witnessed him in Brussels at the Grand Depart, going and speaking to some disabled fans who were in a special area close to the sign-on stage, where most riders had ridden past, obviously. Morkov had stopped and spoken to each of them, so that was nice to hear about. Yano Fredo, a perennial Pedaleur de Charme contender, a former winner as well, but he gave Mikhail Schaar a bottle when he missed his feed in the breakaway the other day. Julien Simon, also for helping Mike Tournesson when he was off the back and in the yellow jersey all the way back in Epernay, I think that was the stage into Epernay.
He took some persuading on Simon that day, didn't he?
Well, he's not got Lionel's vote, but does he have yours? Anyway, we'll be running the poll in the next 24 hours or so, but we don't want to influence at all, but vote Morkov. Anyway, one guy who was in the breakaway today was Thomas De Gendt. You spoke to him at the start.
I did.
Francois, and what he said was quite interesting given what happened.
Thomas, the first real test of this Tour de France. How do you feel about it? It's a stage that could suit you if you start from afar.
Only the last climb is too hard for me, but I would like to be in a breakaway and just to be up front and to try and take some points, or maybe if Tish wants to jump across, then I am already there and I can do my work for him, or maybe Tim. I would like to be up front. It's easier there than to suffer in gruppettos. So I would like to be there somewhere.
You won some of the most famous classic summits in cycling. Would you rate La Planche de Belfi as one of those?
Yeah, it's only the fourth time I think they do a finish there, but it already has a big name in the bunch. 7-8 years ago, nobody knew La Planche de Belfi, but if you tell it now in the bunch, we do La Planche de Belfi, everybody knows what kind of climb it is and how hard it is, even now harder with the extra kilometer they put in. So yeah, it's starting to have a big name. It's not a big climb of the Pyrenees or the Alps, but it's starting to have a big name.
As a man with your experience, it turns out that the last three times the tour came to La Planche des Belles Filles, the man who took the yellow jersey that day won the tour. Do you think we could have the same scenario this time around?
Maybe. That's possible. It's all possible, but it depends on the riders and now the race, and maybe a strong guy of the breakaway still survives, a good climber in the breakaway, and then he will take maybe the yellow jersey for a few days, and then it's a wrong statistic.
Very prescient there from Thomas de Gendt. We're not surprised to see him in a break, but I think we probably were surprised to see survivors of the break contest the finish. And what was really notable, not only that there were some strong riders in that break, but also the lead they had. A feature in bike racing the last couple of years has been that breakaways haven't been allowed very much leeway at all. 3 to 4 minutes has tended to be the maximum advantage they're allowed. Here it went out to 8 minutes, and at that point you thought somebody's going to win from this breakaway.
Things are changing a bit, because when we saw Thomas de Gendt attacked on his own, we thought maybe he's going to do it again. I mean, this is a man who won at some of the most classic summits of the Tour de France. I asked him this morning, as you heard, whether La Planche des Belles Filles was becoming one. Obviously, Thomas de Gendt thought it was, you know, classic enough for him to go for it, but he couldn't. And maybe, you know, I'm not going to talk about age too much, because I'm an old man myself, but there was a bit of fresh air in this stage, because the two guys at the finish, the three, if you took Sandro Maurice, I mean, the three guys who were at the top three in the finale are young riders, Ciccone and Dylan Toons in the first Tour de France. So for the first Tour de France, winning the stage and taking the yellow jersey is quite impressive. And we've seen from the start of this race, up-and-coming riders. I mean, Egan Bernal is among the favorites, and we know he's a young rider as well. I mean, you know, we have the impression that the new generation coming up is an interesting one. Also, what I found interesting is that we tend to, because the tour started from Belgium and we talked about Eddy Merckx a lot, we tend to see from this perspective the Belgians, you know, kind of going down. But look, Dylan Toons, Tim Wellens, is again in a polka dot jersey. Greg Van Avermaet, we know how good he is. That's really certainly a Belgian renewal. Dylan Toons being one of these guys. He won a stage at the Dauphiné. He led the Dauphiné for a while. 2 years ago, he had lots of good results as well. It's kind of this new generation of Belgians already far better than their elders, I think.
Yeah, this question about who should chase and why no one really did is fascinating, really, because it had that feel of a third week's mountain stage where the break goes and we have these two races. It felt very like it, the race for the stage and the race for the GC riders. And fortunately, they played out slightly apart from themselves in real time, so you could concentrate on the one and then concentrate on the other because of the time gap. But both were enthralling, and the thing about the time losses for some of the GC riders this evening is deceptively damaging. I mean, Stephen Kraswijk, 35 seconds lost to Geraint Thomas after really a kind of flawless opening few days for Jumbo-Visma.
Nibali is the one that caught my eye.
Behind that as well. Yeah, paying the price maybe for having had a pretty hard Giro. Romain Bardet, who's... Was it his bike's locked up? His legs locked up on the line?
No, his pedals kind of locked up. But I mean, to me, it was a symbol of the downfall of Romain Bardet today. Not only did he lose time, but being kind of unable to cross the line, because he was actually on the line. His back wheel had not crossed the line, so he actually lost about 3 or 4 seconds trying to cross the. I mean, it was a symbol of disarray, total disarray. I mean. That's what he said at the finish. I listened to him on the French radio, because we're not there at the top to listen to him, and he talked very little, and he repeated three times, well, you know, I don't know, we'll have to study what happened to try and understand, because obviously he was at a loss to understand what happened to him. One thing that's for sure is that the tour win seems to be now out of the question once and for all. And I also listened to Vincent Lavenue, his team manager, who said, well, in a sense, you know, maybe the Tour is quite hampered, the final victory, but with so much now gap on the leaders, we'll be, you know, all out in the second and third week for a stage win.
I mean, I think it's still very... I know what you're saying, Lionel, about the gaps being deceptively damaging in a way, but it still looks very open. It looked to me like there were several teams today, you know, who had numbers in that group, and the group was still quite big as they came into the foot of La Planche des Belles Filles. It wasn't like 2012 when Team Sky... Okay, it was a very different stage, an easier stage, but Team Sky came into that with a real plan to rip it apart, and they really took it on and they drove it and eliminated people like that. That didn't happen today.
Absolutely. And Krauswijk, who will probably look at the stage result and think, oh, that wasn't a great day, can look at the GC and see that he's still in eighth place, only 104 down on Ciccone, only 15 seconds down on Geraint Thomas, and still has George Bennett, his teammate, just above Thomas. The GC is actually a real fascinating, almost kind of a lava lamp of movement today. Some people have sort of slipped to the bottom of the glass, and some people have risen to the top, and there's still a lot of riders still in it. But the point I was really making was that some big names have lost damaging time, Nibali and Bardet being the two.
And you know, it's a great sort of barometer of form, this climb, and it's such a tough climb like that. But it was interesting, for all that it ended up being a very good day for Geraint Thomas, that, you know, Team Ineos were down to three, including their joint leaders, quite, you know, near the foot of La Planche des Belles Filles. I'm not sure what happened to Wout Poels, who is a bit erratic, certainly early in a Grand Tour often, but Michał Kwiatkowski was the guy that really dug them out of a bit of a hole at that point.
Yeah, we can talk about Geraint Thomas and Egan Bernal, because your point earlier in the week about how Bernal had got his nose in front of Thomas, and would that be significant? Well, Thomas has now got his nose back in front of Bernal, and will that be significant? But more interestingly, I think, is the fact that we didn't see Team Ineos take it on. And I wonder if that is because of... Have ASO and Thierry Gouvenou looked at the race as a whole? Because this stage really stands out in its difficulty at this point of the race. We now go into a bit of a lull for 4 days up to the rest day, and then we start again with a flat stage. The real climbing is in the second half. It's almost like a Giro d'Italia type of course. And so was there the sense that we don't want to do too much too early in the race, we don't want to be too hot now and save for the second half of the race, and that led to this kind of, well, let's just wait and see in the final couple of kilometres of the climb?
What made the stage interesting today was precisely that for once in a mountain stage no team took control of it. I mean, Team Ineos didn't. We don't know yet whether it is because it was a choice of theirs not to do it and let maybe the Koenig Quickstep defend the yellow jersey, or to let Movistar take their responsibilities, which they did, because actually if a team did work to chase behind the breakaway, it was Movistar, led by Alejandro Valverde, who sacrificed his chances for Landa and Quintana. It was quite successful in a way, because they both finished in the top 10, you know, I think. So, you know, they did quite well in a way. But to see Team Ineos not leading the way with five guys in the front for once, as you said, Wout Poels, you know, dropped back very quickly. Michel Kwiatkowski disappeared. So was something wrong with those two, or was it, you know, planned from just thinking that the Tour is going to be won in the third week, not to, you know, to save a little bit of energy with these guys? And the outcome was about the same. In this final stretch, well, Thomas and Bernal were there, and Geraint Thomas took a little bit of an edge. So there was an interesting comment by a friend of mine who knows the finale well, and he said maybe the reason why Geraint Thomas, you know, was ahead of Bernal on this last stretch was that it's impossible in such terrain to get up on your pedals, which is the natural position for Bernal. And whereas we know that Geraint Thomas doesn't move from his saddle, this is the way he climbs. So maybe the terrain was more favourable for Thomas.
Just a point on Geraint Thomas. I mean, he hasn't raced anything like this for a year. That is pretty extraordinary. Okay, the Tour de Basque Country, Itzulia, and the Tour of Romandy, yeah, preparation races. But, you know, not to have got through the whole of the Tour of Switzerland, I thought was going to be a real handicap for him. But, you know, yeah, he's right up there. And crucially, still has the right to say, I'm the leader of Team Ineos, because he's the defending champion and he's just ahead of Bernal.
Chute à l'arrière du peloton, Cycling Podcast Team Car at the back of the pack, please.
This episode of our Tour de France coverage is sponsored by the Watt Bike Atom. And Richard and I both had a go on the Watt Bike Atom. And, well, let's hear you in action.
In my performance lab. Okay, here goes. First outing on the Watt Bike set up in my office here. We've got a lot of building work going on next door. I've got Rob Hatch in the background here. That's my entertainment. I've downloaded the Wattbike app and I've selected a program to ride Descending Pyramid. That's a 40 minute session. I think I can manage that. So let's clip in. Okay, I'm set up. I'm going. All very straightforward. Here we go with another interval. Lap 3, up to 243 watts. That's quite a lot for me. Whew. Got tri bars on this setup. First time in a while I've used them, with a very handy iPhone holder at the end of them. Not something to use out on the road, obviously, but really helpful for keeping an eye on power, cadence, and time.
So Richard, you use the Watt Bike Hub.
Quite a seamless segue in this episode from talking about the performances of some of the world's top riders at La Planche de Belfie into me doing my session on the Watt Bike. I mean, you couldn't really, yeah, it's difficult to tell those performances apart, really. But yeah.
I'm afraid the numbers never lie, Richard.
The numbers don't lie. I think I maybe even revealed in that clip what sort of watts I was pushing. Anyway, it was, yeah, I've got the Watt Bike app on my phone, so I could look at my workout on the screen, and you know, some really interesting data came out of it, which we're going to discuss in future episodes. But you learn a lot about not just the watts that you're putting out, but your pedaling effectiveness, and you know, other things that are really kind of crucial to understanding performance and trying to improve performance. So I'd say we'll hear a bit more about that in future episodes.
Yeah, you can simulate riding on climbs from the Tour de France, including Alpe d'Huez.
I didn't do that.
No, well, I wouldn't have thought so. No, you're a big unit, aren't you? You can work on your endurance, work on your speed. You can take on the challenges that are on the Watt Bike Hub, as well as follow their full workout plans. And, well, until July the 31st, Watt Bike is offering a £100 Sigma Sports voucher with every Watt Bike Atom purchased. If you want to find out more about the Watt Bike, go to wattbike.com. If you want to take up this offer or buy a Watt Bike, then go to wattbike.com/TCP100. That's the letters TCP and the number 100, and use the code TCP100 at the checkout to receive your £100 Sigma Sport vouchers.
I mean, the question has to be, De Koon and Quickstep, and you know, could they not have done a lot more today to help Alaphilippe keep his jersey, allowing the break to go at 7 to 8 minutes. They had Kasper Asgreen, their young Dane, on the front for a while, but it seemed slightly tokenistic. They've got the firepower to have kept that gap right down. Now, Enric Mas is their leader for GC, but was that what they were thinking, that they were sort of saving the team to perhaps help him later on? I don't know. I mean, they definitely could have done more to help Alaphilippe keep the jersey today.
The question is, do they really have the means to help Alaphilippe or Enric Mas? Or the question goes even further. Do they really believe Enric Mas is already a GC contender? Or was he on the tour this year to discover and you know, to learn his trade? Because if you look at the at the lineup of the Quick-Step team, it looks more designed in a way for Viviani to win sprints than for Enric Mas to win the tour. So maybe they were they lacked forces there in the finale, like some other teams. The very interesting thing to me is But if you apart from the three, you know, SKPs who finished 1, 2, 3 in the stage, that, then you have Geraint Thomas winning the stage for the of the favourites. All probably I didn't count them. But the 20 other guys after that are all GC contenders except one, and that's Julien Alaphilippe. So he managed today to raise his level. Maybe it's the yellow jersey syndrome, or only, or simply this stage without any attack in the first climbs of the day was actually quite designed for him, because it is the sort of rather short climbs, rather steep climbs that he does well in. And we saw when he attacked in the final stretch to go and try to save his jersey, that it was a good stage for him. But it also raises the question we've been raising for a long time: what's actually Julien Alaphilippe, you know, strengths and what are his you know abilities to go, to try and go further? You know, what will he do in the Pyrenees? What will he do in the Alps? Can he ride? I mean, because he could take this jersey back, especially between Saint-Étienne and Brioude, which is a stage that looks designed for him. And if he does, is he going to race like a Tommy Voeckler, a 2011?
Difficult for him to take the jersey back, though, isn't it? Other than with time bonuses, because he's not going to get in a breakaway.
No, he's not going to get in a breakaway. And Ciccone is going to even though it's only a few seconds, tough nut to crack. I mean, he's not going to get dropped in somewhere unusual, is he?
I mean, he's not a dissimilar rider in a way to Alaphilippe.
Yeah, that's true. I've said for a couple of days I was really looking forward to seeing how Alaphilippe rode, and my suspicion that he might kind of be towards the back and might be sort of on the back foot watching people get dropped around him and just kind of, you know, hanging on to the back, well, that was completely unfounded. He rode like a yellow jersey. He rode on the back of the Ineos train for as much of the time that it was there. He moved up when things were starting to starting to happen around him. He took ultimate responsibility in the final 400 metres. It was really impressive, and I think he'll be pretty disappointed that it wasn't enough to keep the jersey, because looking at the route now, he could have kept that jersey a long way into next week had he kept it today. But now it does serve up this little secondary story of whether there might be a bit of to and fro, because they certainly have the resources to make Trek Segafredo uncomfortable.
The question at the start of the last stretch was who from the GC leaders is going to attack first, and that's when it was interesting, because nothing happened like we thought it would, or nothing happened like was planned by the team. But I think everybody was expecting Thibaut Pinot to attack, and he actually tried. He was led out to by Godu. He was like waiting for Godu, like we have said, you know, to lead him out. If you want a silly,
waiting. It was holding Godu back.
If you want a silly pun, I have one. You know, I've always been an old man from the 60s. I've always liked Dylan tunes personally. Well, never mind. No, I know it's bad. But anyway, so we expected Thibaut Pinot to attack, but he didn't. He couldn't because Alaphilippe attacked before, and then when you thought Pinot would attack on Alaphilippe's wheel, he didn't have time to do that either, because Geraint Thomas attacked. So it was that was the kind of 2 minutes when, you know, suddenly the unexpected happen, even though Pinot, you know, was where he should have been. I mean, he rode a great stage, but
I think Movistar and Groupama FDJ deserve a lot of credit for riding the way they did. You know, I mean, Movistar setting up for Landa to have a go, and he looked great. You know, he looked like he did at the Giro, able to fly away, you know, attacking, climbing on the drops and so on. And then the way that Godu and Pinot came to the front like that, it was very, very impressive to watch. And it does set up quite a mouth-watering Tour de France, because the two of them looked great.
Godu suddenly looked like a man in the race, didn't he? Rather than
I've warned you for a long time. Remember last year I said, well, we'll see, you know, in the long term, because Bernal was put to the front by Team Sky at the time in his first tour, and Groupama FDJ just waited for Godu to kind of ripe up, and we found the guys in the same group here in the finish. So yeah, we'll see what the future holds.
Same age, 22. Godu, you know, very young, but a tremendous talent.
Just back to Alaphilippe and his chances of getting the yellow jersey. His best chances are surely if we see the freewheeling Dylan Teuns.
Excellent. I'm sure there's a million more. I mean, Lionel, dear listeners, find silly,
he's been trying to get that in for ages. I could tell.
Yeah,
there was
well,
something.
He rode like a Rolling Stone. I mean,
He does like these really, really steep finishes, though, doesn't he, Dylan Teuns? There was that stage in the Vuelta last year that Michael Woods won on this, you know, in the Basque Country on this crazy ascent to the line. And Teuns does thrive on those kinds of finishes.
In the press conference afterwards, he referenced the mistakes he made there and how that was playing through his mind.
I think these steep, really steep climbs are all about not making mistakes. And I think, I don't, you know, although they do offer a sort of a barometer of form and so on, and there are a few guys who just weren't at the races, I think Nibali, Kruijswijk, there was enough there to see that they're not really on top of it to the same extent the others are. But Alaphilippe just went a little bit too early, perhaps. Geraint Thomas got it absolutely bang on. But everybody else who was up there just behind them had just maybe mistimed it. I don't think that, you know, that we saw enough today to say that anybody is the firm favourite. It still looks like quite an open race.
A finish like that is about the strength, isn't it? The power to wait strength and timing, rather than the kind of the sitting on the limit and judging and going for kilometre after kilometre and knowing exactly what you've got left in the tank. It's a different challenge. And I think that's what's so interesting. Richard, at the very finish, you said, chapeau Christian Prudhomme for the extra bit, and people were kind of saying, do they need the gravelly
they
bit
were
at the top. I thought it worked absolutely perfectly.
It was
because
amazing.
You had
the
hard original finish and then you had the second kick, and it may be that in future years everyone learns exactly how to do it, but the first time it sowed that seed of doubt, didn't it, and it made it a great finish.
Bernal was perhaps a surprise. I think a lot of people were predicting that he would just storm away on this climb and put down a real marker and perhaps take the yellow jersey and hold on to it. That didn't really happen. He didn't react that well when Thomas jumped clear. But we did meet earlier in the press room, didn't we, Lionel? Somebody who knows Egan Bernal very, very well, our old friend from the Giro.
We did. Gianni Savio, the boss of Androni Sidamec, who, we'll take the credit for discovering Bernal. But during the Giro, our colleague Daniel Freib would ask Savio about his formation for the stage. And Savio would say, oh, today we're playing with one attacker or two attackers or whatever. And I asked him to start with, if he was the boss of Team Ineos, what would be his formation for today? And then after that, he told me kind of how he did discover Bernal and what he made of him when he first brought him onto the team.
I think that the boss of Team Ineos, Dave Bradford, is very, very good. And so I think that he prepared the tactic of the team depending from the condition of Geraint Thomas and Egan Bernal. So for me, it's not possible. I don't know the condition. I know that for you this is an answer, this is a diplomatic answer, but this is really, because in my team, Androni Sidermec, I know the condition of all my riders, because the condition is not only the results in the race, but also the test that they have with the medicine. But I think that Ineos will make a very good race today.
You know him very well. How did you find him? How did you discover Bernal?
So I have a good relation with Colombia, because I was technical commissary of Colombia National. And in this year we won with Santiago Botero the World Championship in time trial. So I have a very good contact. I have a friend of mine, Hector Urrego, is the director of Radio Cadena Nacional And so I have also contact to see new riders. All the years I have Colombian rider in my team. This year I have Miguel Flores and Daniel Munoz. Daniel Munoz was we race next week in Romania in Sibiu, Sibiu Tour, and we won with the Costa Ricense. So, returning to Egan Bernal, was his manager in this time, Paolo Alberati, who came in the finish of Agostoni. And in the finish of Coppa Agostoni, he asked me about one Italian rider. He was Italian champion of the category elite. But I answered him that I have a sprinter, so I need one climber. And he told me, I have here the climber. And so I see, but this was a very, very young. So in Italiano, I answer Paolo, questo è un bimbo. Bimbo is
a baby.
And Paolo told me, when I send you the test of this bimbo, you phone me. And I talk with Egan, and next day I signed the contract.
The Cycling Podcast at the 2019 Tour de France is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you very much to our kind sponsor, Science in Sport, for supporting Cycling Podcast and offering you 25% off with the code SISCP25 at scienceandsport.com. Science in Sport are also offering a tremendous prize. They're running a competition with Team Ineos. They are the nutrition providers to Team Ineos, of course. The prize is to win a day in the team car with Team Ineos, either at the Vuelta or the Tour of Britain. It includes two nights accommodation, transport, and £400 spending money. I mean, I don't want to sound more excited about the £400 spending money than the day in the team car, obviously. Five runners up will win a signed Team Ineos jersey. All entrants will receive 15% off their next order, although we know how you can get 25% off your next order. To enter, you can visit the website scienceofsport.com/signup. That's scienceofsport.com/signup. It's a great prize on offer there, thanks to Science and Sport. So what else from today, chaps? I mean, I was thinking, you were mentioning the climb, and we should mention that our episode of Kilometre Zero this morning was on La Planche des Belles Filles, and there was a little bit of scepticism. Some people were very anti the extension to the climb. They felt that it was enough as it was, and that a gravelly bit for an extra kilometre was completely unnecessary. It was a little bit like, we're so familiar now with that finish, it was a bit like Narnia. It was a bit like entering a kind of wardrobe and a kind of hidden land behind the door, wasn't it? Taking you into a whole new dimension, it seemed. And, you know, from tarmac onto gravel. And we didn't know how gravelly it would be, but it was dusty. It was almost like a Strada Bianchi type road, wasn't it? And I thought it was great.
You started this episode by saying that, you know, so many teams told us they had not checked the last kilometer and didn't know what it was like. Well, first of all, they might have listened to the kilometer zero this morning to find out. And secondly, I mean, with all the checking that's been done, all the marginal gains you can make, you know, the right choice of tires and all the, you know, the checking of courses and climbs and everything, I don't believe a word of these guys saying they didn't know what to expect. This is... Well, I'm not going to say it because so many of you want me to say it. But I
go on.
But I don't believe, you know, for 1 second that teams had not checked.
No, but I think they checked. But I don't think many riders had ridden up that. And that, I think that was maybe the key thing, that for all of them, they were going into the unknown in that respect. They'd watched, they'd seen it, they knew about it, but they didn't know really how to ride it. And I think that maybe caught a few people out.
And really, it was the ideal first mountain top finish of the tour, because it didn't enable somebody to really deliver a hammer blow. When you look at the results, it's a handful of seconds here and a couple of seconds there and a couple of seconds there. And so we can look at the results and see that pecking order, and we can say, oh, Fuglsang held up very well, and Richie Port was in the same group as him, and Landa and Bernal, and Adam Yates, who on the face of it you think came over the line a little bit off the back, but actually was only 5 seconds behind that Fuglsang, Landa, Port group. You know, Uran and Woods are still in there for EF Education First. It's given us an indication of who is feeling good at this stage of the race. But the fascinating thing is that that actually means nothing, because the serious climbing is still yet to come. So
yeah, of all the GC guys, I should certainly acknowledge that Geraint Thomas looked the best. He got it right. What that means, you know, about for the third week in particular, we don't know. I mean, Bernal still will be the favourite for a lot of people, but Thomas, you know, he's going to put up a good fight, I think.
But we've craved a race where we don't know the winner.
Fanciful to suggest
after the
win,
first mountain stage. This was your comment last year, Francois, and we, you know, it sucked the wind out of our sails a little bit. But when you look back at the history of the race, certainly the recent history, it is absolutely true. This year, well, Giulio Ciccone wins the Tour, hats off to him, but I can't see
what will you
do, that.
Lionel, if he wins the Tour? What will be your forfeit?
If Giulio Ciccone wins the Tour, I will eat another plate of sauerkraut and pork product.
Oh, wow. What a sacrifice.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Well, the last thing I can say, it used to be, we used to say, you know, the old school guys, that on the first mountain stage, you don't win the Tour, but you can lose it. So once again, the only lesson we can draw from today is Nibali has probably lost the Tour, but did we expect him to win it? No, not really. He said himself he would be a stage hunter. Did we really expect Romain Bardet to win the Tour this year? His team always had problems all the season. He himself crashed and had problems. So it's not a good year for Bardet. So actually, it just confirmed what we knew. These guys that we've put in the list of favourites are not, and that's about it.
Lionel, is it time for?
It's time for Outside the Team Bus, Rich. Now, I've seen a couple of comments from people saying, well, aren't you always outside the team bus? And yes, we are always outside the team bus, but the difference with being outside the team bus and being outside the team bus is that we have a slightly less formal conversation rather than a sort of a specific interview.
Excuse me, Mr. Pino, may I ask you a few questions about today's stage?
I'm trying to get round every team bus through the course of the race, which is something that I wouldn't ordinarily manage to do. So today I was at Groupama FDJ, a very important day for them with the local man Pino, and I spoke to one of his teammates.
Outside the team bus with
Stefan King, Groupama FDJ.
So Stefan, it's a big day for the team and a big day for Thibaut Pino. He's on home soil.
Yeah, exactly. It's his home roads. Obviously he wants to do good. I mean, it's the first mountain test of the tour, so it's a really important day for us.
How well do you know the roads here?
Yeah, we did the recon end of May, so I know the whole stage.
And what's your job specifically today?
Today it's more going to be like protect Thibaut as long as possible, at least until the last steep climb before Col de Chevrier, and just keep him out of trouble.
How is this team different to your last team, BMC? From the outside, it would feel like a very different type of organisation, but how have you found it?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's a French team, so the main language is French compared to English last year. It's really familiar, like it's like a big family. But otherwise, in terms of like performance, professionalism, it's really on a very, very high level, and I like it a lot.
Am I right in thinking your first language is German, or?
Yes, exactly. I'm the only I'm the only guy here at the tour that's mother tongue is not French.
But your French must be pretty good. Did you learn it in school at an early age?
Yeah, I learned it in school, the basics, and then in the national team, my roommate was a guy from the French-speaking part of Switzerland, And yeah, so my French is almost better than my English.
Who's your roommate here on this race?
It's the other Swiss guy, Sebastian Reichenbach.
So you're a little Swiss enclave in the French team here.
Exactly, yeah.
And just tell me a little bit about the team time trial, because it was a very good result, even though you had the little crash in the last 500 metres or so. Have you done a lot of work on team time trialing this year?
Yeah, sure. I mean, we were here in the Alsace region for a little training camp, and we worked also on that. We worked during the early training camps in the year. And then, I mean, I kind of tried to bring my expertise in this discipline to the team. And yeah, so we were able to adjust a few little things which make a difference in the end. And so, yeah, we did a good job there Sunday. And yeah, it puts the team on a good track. The motivation stays really high. The confidence stays high. And that's really good. That's really important.
What is Marc Madio like as a boss? Because we have this impression that he is Monsieur France. He's very patriotic. Has he sung the national anthem yet?
No. But, I mean, he's a thing which really impresses me. He really stands in for his rider. So as soon as... I mean, he always defends us no matter what happens. And he's always there to support us. But then he leaves like the sportive side, he leaves to the DSs and to the coaches. So that's, in my opinion, that's really important, that the manager, he recruits the best stuff there is and then gives them the confidence to do their job. And that's what he does. And I think that's something we don't see so often in pro cycling.
Oh, well, another great installment of Outside the Team Bus Airline. I look forward to this every day. Fantastic.
No, you don't. You look forward to me failing. You look forward to me coming back crestfallen to the team, to the cycling podcast team car. Who did you get outside the team bus? No one, Richard. I'll do two tomorrow to make up for it.
Harsh. Before we go, reminder, we're doing a show in Harrogate at the World Championships on the Friday evening. Cycling Podcast plus friends. Go to the cyclingpodcast.com events to buy tickets for that. It should be really good, and it's the biggest one we've ever done. We also a quick reminder that we do a daily newsletter, including a paragraph of finely crafted words, some memory from the day, something that happened during the day by myself or Lionel, usually Lionel. And
it's your turn tonight, Richard.
Okay, my turn tonight, and that comes in our nightly newsletter. To subscribe, go to the cyclingpodcast.com, and you can also, through the newsletter, enter a competition to win the Austin Cycles Atto folding bike that I've been riding around on. And I went for a ride on it this morning. It's fantastic carbon folding bike. So stand a chance of winning that. Say why you should feel you should win it, and enter the competition through our newsletter. Before we go, chaps, let's say thanks to a few friends of the podcast, those of you who signed up at thecyclingpodcast.com. Thank you very much indeed to Timothy Christie, Alexander Jones, Nicholas Brown, Luke Jerome, Paul Bergen,
David Alexander, Marek Puko, James Ellerman, Robin Soper, and Matthew Smith.
And Mark Treby, Jorge Barcia, Russell Gray, Guillermo Bartolome, and Bennett Smith.
Brilliant. Thank you very much, Lionel.
Thank you, Richard.
Thank you, Francois.
Thank you so much.